Welcome back to the Life of a Gentleman podcast. Here is where the guys discuss, debate, and consider all aspects of living like a true gentleman. Rich and Anton will consider entrepreneurship, success, fashion and styling, family life, and everything in between. So sit back, relax, and enjoy our latest saunter into the life of a gentleman. Guys, take it away.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to the Life of a Gentleman podcast. This week, we have as our special guest in-house is Marcus Guignard. And we're going to talk to him about his life, some of the things that he's doing now. Many of you know him from his past, but we really want to get you reacquainted with the man that Marcus has become. So, Rich, I opened up. I'd like for you to be able to drop this man's bio for us so we can get, you know, our audience up to speed with who he is.
Yeah, definitely. Marcus has a great, rich history, especially for you basketball fans. If you were like me growing up being a North Carolina Tar Heels fan, you definitely remember the name. A former captain of the team, definitely loved for his tough defense, the tenacity. And if I'm remembering correctly, in that Final Four, took out the Michigan State Spartans at one point during one of those tournament runs. And so those are my two favorite basketball teams. I lived in North Carolina for a while, live in Michigan. Those are some big heavy hitters when it comes to basketball. Marcus is part of that proud tradition. ACC champs 2007, 2008, serving as the captain of our team, and national champion in 2009. So hats off to you. And then also went on to play professional basketball overseas for 8 years and coming back to the States doing absolutely amazing things, which we're going to get into. So welcome to the show, Marcus.
Thanks. Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate the time. Appreciate the opportunity to be here. I hate to start this whole thing off correcting you guys, but I worked hard for this, Rich and Anton. I worked hard for this. I played 11 years in Europe.
11.
Played in eight different countries. That may be what we got mixed up here. But yeah, played 11 years in Europe. No, it really doesn't matter, but, you know, was very fortunate to do that. But yeah, I appreciate you guys having me.
Awesome. Thanks for being here.
So I guess, Marcus, I guess where we want to begin is just kind of give a little bit more of your backstory. Like, so everybody knows that from college to you playing overseas, you know, some of your accomplishments or where you've been. But like, where did you come from? You know, like, you know, we all say we came from humble beginnings. Like, you know, what were your beginnings?
Yeah. I grew up in Northern Virginia, kind of in two parts. One part in Woodbridge, Dale City, Dumfries, Manassas, this kind of area. A little farther outside of Washington, D.C., but not terribly far. And then kind of the second half of my upbringing was in Alexandria, Virginia, just outside of Washington, D.C., where I spent kind of years 12 to 18. And, you know, was the son of two military parents. I have one older brother. It's just my brother and I. So my mother was in the Air Force. My father was in the Marines. So you can imagine from a very young age, was taught some pretty important, you know, life values and core values that are still very, very important to me to this day. You know, one interesting story I always like to tell to give people a little bit of an idea of kind of how intense this type of upbringing was. You know, I'm 35 years old and I still make my own bed in the hotel.
Wow.
So it's just kind of one of those things where it's very difficult for me to walk out of my room without making my bed, you know, but I'm very, very grateful for that upbringing that I had, one with my older brother, who was a big time role model for me. And then just my parents, who instilled so many great things that, you know, kind of started with the idea of them being in the military, but ultimately were just for me, super, super important, you know, life skills and life values, like integrity and character and hard work and discipline and things that, you know, are still very, very important to me to this day. So played high school basketball in that area. You know, everybody, you know, again, I know that there may be some basketball fans out there, but, you know, you hear about the Mathis of the world out of the Washington, D.C. area. We played in that same conference, actually played for the legendary Morgan Wooten, played for his son, Joe Wooten, at Bishop O'Connell High School, where we went on to be state champs a couple of times and won the WCAC, the Washington Catholic Athletic Conference, won that conference title for the first time in school history. And then went on to play basketball at Carolina, as we kind of alluded to earlier, played 5 years at Carolina, was injured 1 year, so I had to redshirt, which gave me the beautiful opportunity to stay in Chapel Hill 5 years. So
right.
On one side, it was tough being hurt. On the other side, it's great to spend more time down here and play for another Hall of Fame coach in Roy Williams here in my time in North Carolina. And then that led me on to playing overseas. But love thinking about that time as a youngster in the Washington, D.C. area and the Northern Virginia area, because that was just a time where I learned so many things that still ring true to me today. And I think it's interesting to be on this podcast, specifically this gentleman's podcast, right? And thinking about some things that I heard from my grandmother and my father growing up. My father grew up in Baltimore, and he used to always tell me, and apparently this came from my grandmother, but he used to always tell me that the first thing people are going to notice about you are your shoes. Are your shoes clean? Are they polished? And I don't know many other 19-year-old kids out here that are polished and polished. I got that lesson. And again, you know, one of those things where, you know, maybe there's 1% of the population that's doing that right now. But
right.
I'm very grateful to have learned some lessons like that from an early age.
Yeah, it seems like from an early age, they instilled that into you, a lot of good values, the discipline. And you've taken that with you throughout your life, throughout your career, and it really shows, which is why we reached out to have you on, because you embody what we talk about, you know, the life of a gentleman, the way you carry yourself, all those things we find to be super, super important. Learning those things at an early age, do you think it helped you as you move through the different levels of your career, you know, basketball career or even professional career as well?
Absolutely. I mean, there's no question about that. I think that, you know, whether you want to look at this from an athletic standpoint, whether you want to look at this from a business standpoint or just life in general, right? I think that these are all things that transcend all of these different categories, right? You know, talked about discipline and just, you know, the way you carry yourself, the way you treat people, the way, I mean, that is sports, life, business, everything together, right? And so I think I was very fortunate to learn these lessons before sports and then get them reinforced in sports and now getting them reinforced in business, right? And just understanding that these things are again, core values. They're core values for a reason, right? Like, they are at the core and the foundation of all of these things. And so, just feel very fortunate to have been put on that path at a young age and able to develop and grow into those things, as a young man, and as an adult.
I got a question. When you were making a decision on what direction you were going to go, was it difficult or was the military, like, was that ever a thing in your mind that maybe the direction you would want to go? Or did you know early on that you had enough instilled in you that you knew that you had learned enough and that maybe the military wasn't for you, but you had some of those, you know, those core things that you could just pull away from? Like, was that difficult initially?
You know, initially it was very easy for me. It was very easy for me to go the other way. You know, I feel like it's, and I don't know, I don't have kids, so it's hard for me to really jump into this space. But I feel like, you know, what you see from your parents a lot of times will either bring you all the way to that or kind of opposite of that, right? And so, like, I was very early was like, that's definitely not for me. However, again, you know, to this day, I love telling that story, and I love, you know, kind of describing myself and introducing myself as a son of two military parents, because I understand the importance of those things and how they fit into my life today. But it was, I knew that that was not the route that I wanted to go.
Right.
All right, go ahead, Rich. I'm sorry. Okay, I got other things. Because we're going down a little path. It's interesting. I have a couple of questions I could ask just down this vein. Because, like, we think about, like, you spoke about your parents. And, you know, I was talking to my wife last week. And so much of who we are comes from our upbringing. You know, the interactions of our parents and all kinds of things and how they shape and they kind of mold us as we grow. And keep your question. I'm not going to ask mine, but I was just thinking, like, you know, sometimes our parents kind of want us to move in a certain direction. Either they just let us be free little birds and we just do what we want to do, or they just kind of say, hey, you know, we kind of want you to go down this path. And we'll get back to that. But I kind of want to know, no, you know.
Anton, go with it. Just go with
okay.
it.
Okay.
I'll jump on the next one. Go ahead.
Okay. Because, you understand what I'm saying, Marcus? Like, sometimes. Absolutely. You know, you come from two proud military parents, right? And they can say, you know, listen, these junior boys, they're going to be, you know, in the military. Or you could have the parents and say, you know what? You guys have to make a decision on your own. So I just wanted to know, what was that dynamic like?
Yeah.
You know, if I can, I don't want to get too deep. Don't worry. I'm not going to ask you anything too personal, Marcus, but it's just important.
I think that's a great question. And I'm happy to answer that. I think that, you know, again, I feel like, gosh, I already feel like a broken record here talking about how fortunate I am. But it was, again, just very lucky to have parents that didn't say, you're going to do this, right? But
right.
what they did say is, you're going to learn how to be a decent human being. And you're right. going to learn how to work hard. And you're going to learn, you know, how to conduct yourself in a way that is going to make you proud of yourself. And subsequently going to make us proud of you, right? And so I think that growing up, I don't know that I heard these words, but I felt this, right? They knew and they told us in the ways that they did that we were going to be successful young men. Now, they didn't say we had to go to the military. They didn't say we had to play sports. They didn't say we had to be a doctor. But we had to work our butts off in school. We had to stay focused and disciplined. We had to give our best effort in whatever we did. We had to be respectful to everybody around us. And so without pushing us in a specific direction, they certainly pushed us in the direction of success. And so that's one thing that, again, I'm just super grateful for them to have that understanding and to have that wherewithal as young parents, right? Because you got to think about young parents.
Yeah.
And what they were going through in their lives and what they experienced from their parents. And so having this young set of parents who are doing the best that they can, who are reaching levels in their lives that their previous families never met. And how do they, you know, push that on us to continue to be ambitious and to continue to kind of raise the bar without pushing us too hard, you know, and without pushing us in a direction that we may not want to go. And so, you know, again, just super lucky to have parents whose first priority was to be supportive in a way, knowing that they were bringing up two young men in a way that we could all be proud of.
Gotta love that. I mean, they set you up for success. So let's move forward through, you know, some of the life changes. Success, like you mentioned, in high school with athletics, and I'm sure as well as your grades, you know, like you said, that was a big thing, hitting the books. You arrive at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'd love to just hear a story about one of the maybe points that stick with you that Coach Williams really instilled into you, because we're big on mentorship here.
Yeah.
So, you know, coaches play a huge factor in your life. So Coach Williams, I mean, he's Hall of Fame. Everybody knows who he is. I mean, just maybe a good story or just something that he said that always stuck with you, kind of helped you advance your career even till today.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to put Coach Williams on the side for one second.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to just give a little bit of love to Coach Joe Wooten in high school, who there's a few things, one of which I'm going to talk about that always stuck out to me about Coach Wooten and what he told me as a youngster. So I remember Coach Wooten used to come shoot with me before practice, after practice, on the weekends when I was in ninth grade. And I used to always get frustrated after I missed a shot. We used to have this drill where we'd make 10 shots from one spot, and then within that same line, just kind of back up a couple steps, make 10, you know, kind of go from right underneath the rim, form shooting all the way out to the three-point line.
Right.
I remember, you know, going through the different spots of this drill, and, you know, I get a little farther out and I start missing more shots, and I'd always be super frustrated, you know, and visibly frustrated and not focusing on the next shot. And, you know, one of the things he always told me was to one, think about the next shot, right? But two, to give the same energy to the missed shots that I do to the made shots, right? Like a lot of times we beat ourselves up so much over the bad shot and then don't celebrate ourselves enough on the good shot, right? And so, like, why are we playing against each other in that way, against ourselves, excuse me, in that way, right? So that was something that always kind of stood out to me. And then moving on to Coach Williams, this isn't this is the first thing that comes to mind because I just told somebody this story yesterday. And he used to always tell us before every practice, we had an offensive thought of the day, a defensive thought of the day, and then a kind of overall general thought of the day. And that was on the practice plan every day. And so you'd be in the locker room, you'd be looking at the practice plan, see kind of, you know, what you're going to be doing that day. By the way, 302 start, 307 drill number one, 311 next drill. I mean, this is like talking about military parents and then going to a practice like this. I was like, oh. So one of the thoughts of the day for Coach Williams used to be, good teams have good teammates. Great teams have great teammates. And, you know, the first time I read through that, I said, okay, I guess that kind of makes sense. You know, okay, good teams, good teammates, great teams, great teammates, right? And, you know, as I went on in the program and our good teams became great teams, I started to get a better understanding of that. And again, you know, this then kind of comes back to, again, this military background of team and team goals above self. And how do I make my team better and hold each other accountable? And, you know, how do we grow together? And so just thinking about, again, how we treat other people, how we work with other people, you know, this idea that none of the success that we experience in our lives is just because of us, right?
Like,
idea that how do I be a better teammate to make my team better and put that first, and knowing that ultimately that's going to make me better as well, right? And so that's one thing that I always took from Coach Williams, along with hundreds and hundreds of other things. But then another thing I think is always interesting is a quote of the day that we had, that you can't control the wind, but you can adjust your sails. And I always love repeating that, right? You can't control the wind, but you can adjust your sails. And so in our lives, we experience so many things that are just literally outside of our control.
Right.
And there's times where, you know, you get frustrated by that, or you even get excited. Sometimes you get sad, but whatever it is, it's like, that's so out of your control and ultimately a waste of your time to worry about, right? But really where we should focus our control is, the wind is coming from the north, it's coming from the south, it's coming at 10 miles an hour, it's coming at 20. Well, how do I position myself within that wind to take me where I want to go, right?
Right.
And so just kind of reframing, you know, your lens and your perspective on what's important, what you should be giving your energy to, and kind of how to move through this world. And again, it's so interesting that I'm in a position where I learned kind of three separate silos, right? Like business world, you know, growing up under military family, and then like athletics, but all of the lessons are the same, and they can all be applied in each other realm. And it's just such a beautiful thing to get those types of stories and those types of lessons that can be put into use in anything you're doing.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're a captain in school. You had a really nice college career, right? You said you were in school for 5 years because you got hurt one year, your red shirt, right?
Cool.
So when you're in school at this time, things are going well. You guys are doing well as a team, you know, making a name for yourself. your imagination was where you're going next against what actually, like what was the transition from college to your next level in sports?
Well, if you don't mind me kind of, again, just kind of navigating this ship a little bit, let's just take a quick little detour here.
Yep.
You mentioned that, you know, the career was great at Carolina and everything was going well. Well, let's get to some of that adversity, right? Let's get some of those wins coming in a different direction. Yep. So I was hurt my senior year. So we worked freshman year, making the NCAA tournament as a team that was a rebuilding year. Nobody thought anything of us. We finished second in the ACC, went to the NCAA tournament. Next year, we make it to the Elite Eight. Barely get beat in the Elite Eight game. Right on the brink of making it to the Final Four as sophomores, right?
Right.
In our junior year, we make it to the Final Four, get absolutely embarrassed by Kansas in the first game of the Final Four, and we said, you know what? We're going to come back and we're going to win this thing. And that last year is the year I get hurt. That's the year I have to redshirt. That's the year I have to watch my team win a national championship, right? Now, there's no doubt in anybody's mind that you played an incredible role on the team, on the bench, in practice, in the locker room, but I was not able to be on the court.
Right.
And so, you know, as an 18, 19, I guess at that point, 20-year-old kid, I mean, that's some pretty tough stuff to deal with, right? And then come back your fifth year while all the guys you came into school with are gone, right? And so that was a very difficult time for me to miss that, to feel like I couldn't quite give everything to my team the way that I wanted to, then having to come back without, and, you know, obviously my teammates were great, the younger guys, but and turned out I ended up getting another really close friend of mine and brother who was in that class right behind me as a junior that I then graduated with. So it's cool that we were able to build our relationship even more because of that extra year. But, you know, that was a tough time for me. And so getting through that was another point of adversity for me and a really big point of growth, right? And a big point, I think, a turning point in my leadership. You know, being a second year senior with a young team and we struggled that year, you know,
right.
Didn't make the NCAA tournament, lost in the championship of the NIT. And, you know, that was, you know, looked at as a disappointing and, you know, and a disappointing season for North Carolina basketball team. And so to be a part of that was difficult. Right. But I think that helped me grow. And then as that moved on into the next phase and trying to figure out what's going to be next, and I'll be honest with you, at that time, I'm a 21-year-old kid. I'm looking at the mock draft boards. I'm like, oh, man, I could be a potential second-round pick. Maybe there's a chance something sticks. And had a chance to work out with the Charlotte Bobcats, which put you in a very small window of time that they were the Charlotte Bobcats, right?
Right.
So got to try out for the Bobcats and went down to play with them in the summer league, in the NBA summer league before the season started. And right before the summer league started, I'll never forget, you know, Phil Ford, a great mentor of mine. Phil Ford walked in the room and he said, you know, we just drafted Gerald Henderson last year. We got some other young guards. Like, honestly, I don't think that there's going to be any playing time for you here in summer league, you know? And I was like, Phil, listen, I appreciate it. I appreciate you guys bringing me down here and practice with these guys. It was great. So then again, you know, you're just like faced with a little more adversity, right? Like, now what? And you can just keep grinding it out. What are you going to do? And I'll tell you what, gents, that same night, I got a phone call from my agent and said, hey, we got a deal for you in Germany.
Really?
I said, you know what? Let's do it. Sign me up. Fly back home, pack my bags. And then later that summer, I was off to Germany. And that started my 11-year professional career, most of which was in Europe. And, you know, just being open to new opportunities, you know, I think there's a lot of guys right now, either on the brink of playing in the NBA, college, or even some guys that are in the NBA and on the brink of being out.
Right.
That look at playing in Europe very differently than I did. I looked at it as an opportunity. You know, I wanted to be a pro basketball player. I didn't necessarily want to be an NBA player. You know, I wanted basketball to be my job. And I had an opportunity for that to happen. And it also opened up literally opened up the world to me. And I'm so grateful that I took that first job in Germany, which then led me on to eight other countries, in a and again, just a broader perspective on this life that we have, you know, having lived in all those places in Europe. And so, you know, I didn't really have an expectation of you know, what my life after college was going to look like. Looking back now, I think I took risks that were pretty big and at the time didn't really realize what I was doing maybe. And so I don't want to give myself too much credit for taking those risks. I think I was just maybe more stupid than anything, but you know, looking
just
back,
dice, just a young man dice rolling,
you know, as a 22-year-old, and you say, hey, we're going to move you to Germany, a place where you don't speak German. You don't know anybody in Germany. And now you're going to be a professional, whether you're a basketball player or not, you are now a professional. You're on your own. You're going to have your own place. You're going to have your own car. Yeah. You're going to figure out how to open up your own bank account. You're going to figure out how to transfer your own money back over to your, I mean, like, and you're in Germany, you know, you're not in California versus Texas. Like you're by yourself all the way over there, you know? And so I think that's a huge risk. And at the time I was just like, yeah, sure. Let's do it. Let's go. Well, didn't know what I was getting myself into.
The
so,
wind was blowing and you went with it, right? You adjusted your sail, right? You took the advice.
Exactly. Just went with it.
Yeah. So you mentioned 8 different countries and you don't have to list them all, but it'd be kind of fun to just know what were some of your favorite cities or countries, if you want, along the way.
We'll just go right through it. So it was started in Germany, then went on to play in Israel, then went to play in Poland, Ukraine, back to Poland, France, New York for a short stint, was on the inaugural G League team for the New York Knicks. Greece.
Go Knicks.
Greece, Romania, Macedonia. I think that's all of them. So I spent the majority of my time over several different stints was in Poland. Second after that, the most time I spent in one place was in France, where I played most recently, which was probably my favorite place to be. I also really enjoyed my time in Germany, my first, you know, season out. And so my time in Germany is always going to be very special to me, kind of just, you know, getting started and in that first place where I lived and some of those families that I'm still in contact with. And you know, that's a really special place for me. And then, believe it or not, I really enjoyed my time in Ukraine. We had a really, really good experience over there. And unfortunately, that was cut short back in 2014 due to the war in Ukraine. And then obviously now you're seeing kind of what's happening again in Ukraine, which is very difficult. And, you know, just strange to have that type of connection with Ukraine.
Right.
I lived there and played there and know some folks there. But got a lot of love for Ukraine and the people in Ukraine as well.
Nice.
My thoughts is about your time traveling and moving from, you know, especially as being a young man, right? Unless you are uber wealthy or you join the military, a lot of people at your age at that time don't get to see the world the way you did. And of course, I can just by our short time interact, I know that your parents had a big deal with you being able to handle yourself in those situations. But outside of their gaze and their influence and their, I shouldn't say influence because you had a phone so that you could talk to them so they could still influence you. But absolutely, they're not, you know, you don't have that direct contact with your parents. They don't see you. How do you think that your traveling and being in Europe and other places helped to make you a better world citizen and having a better understanding of how the world works and how just people work around the world? You know, I know it broadened your outlook.
Your question almost kind of answers itself, right? Like perspective. That perspective that you gain from being in all those different places and interacting with all those people and seeing what life is like for people in a lot of different areas and a lot of different situations, the interactions that you have with people, all of those things help create a perspective that's very unique. You know, I know folks here in North Carolina who have never been outside of North Carolina,
right,
or have perhaps been to Florida one time, you know,
right.
And so just their lens and their perspective on life is so limited, right? And so to think about what family dinner looks like in a lot of other places, and to think about what family dynamic feels like right. in other places, to think about what business dynamic looks like in other places, right? I mean, like, one of the things that always jumps out to me is I think about France, and I think about getting invited to go to someone's house for lunch and being there for 3 hours for lunch.
Right, right.
You know, or that most business folks in France get a 1.5 or 2 hour lunch.
Right, right.
Like, think about how that is very different from you scarfing down a Chipotle salad at your desk at work.
Right,
exactly. Right.
Look at that, right? And so, like, yep. There's so many things that just create an entirely new perspective, an entirely new lens for you to look through. That to me, it's just so unique in the way that you can get that. And you also don't get that from going to Italy for a week.
Right.
You're right. In your hotel and maybe right. you're running around on tours, and that's cool. You get like a yep. flash of it.
Yep.
But you're not living there. You're not going into locals' homes. You're not
immersed.
Exactly. You know, you're not speaking the language. You're not. Right. So it's like, while it's very good to travel,
of course,
and I will always, always, always recommend that and support that. I'm just, again, very, very fortunate to have been able to really be immersed in these different cultures around the world, and really get to feel that energy and to feel that culture and to understand people at a deeper level. You know, it was, again, gosh, lucky is just the name of the game here. You know, just lucky to be able to travel to, I want to say, like 42 different countries over the time that I was playing in Europe. It's really funny because yeah. my girlfriend last night was asking me, because we're always thinking about places to travel, and she was like, have you been to Lithuania? And I was like, yeah, I've been to a couple spots in Lithuania. And she's like, what about Latvia? And I was like, yeah. And you know, she was like looking at some list online, just kind of rounding them off. And every time I was like, yeah, I've been there already.
Been you there.
Know? So it's getting kind of tough for us to find a spot that I haven't been to, especially in Europe. But it's really an incredible experience in a way. Again, your question just said it all, right? Broadens your horizons, creates a new perspective, and allows you to appreciate the things that you have here. It allows you to want things to be better here that maybe you saw were better somewhere else.
Right, so right.
It's really just perspective, I think, is really the key word here, and one of the most beautiful things about being able to travel, especially in the way that I was able to.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. And you speak of broadening the horizons, right? So I'm going to kind of switch gears just a little bit. You'll see where I'm going.
Yeah.
You're an avid wine enthusiast. Now, where did that come from? Like, did you pick that up on your travels over there in Europe?
I'll give you one guess where that came from.
Oh, I know. France.
Living in France.
Living in France. We had a feeling, but we had to ask.
You know, and of course, everybody doesn't fall into it the way I did. But if you got a little bit of interest in it, let me tell you, you live in France, you're going to be all in sooner or later. And, I just kind of fell into it. You know, it was just one of those things where no matter where you are on the wine craziness, when you live in France, it's such an integral part of their culture and their food and their connection. And so you just have to know about it. Like, everybody in France just has such a interesting baseline understanding about wine, right?
Really?
You want to talk about a wine from Left Bank Bordeaux. Everybody in France knows that, you know what, 2016 was a pretty solid year, you know, and 17 wasn't as good, but 18 was a little bit better. And like, whether they love wine or not, it's just like kind of, hey, the Cowboys just drafted so-and-so. Like, everybody knows.
Right, right.
My understanding of this, right? And so then you're starting to have a little bit of wine at dinner every now and then. And then the next thing you know, you're like looking in your recycling bin. You're like, man, did I drink all that wine? And then I started meeting, you know, folks that own restaurants, some sommeliers out there, and, you know, other folks in the wine industry. And then I just kind of just brought that passion with me everywhere I went, and then got lucky to move back to France after a time away. And then it really, really took off. And now it's funny. This is happening in real time. You know, I just got, maybe 2 hours ago, I got a quote from a wine shipping company because I still have roughly 110, 115. We're still trying to get the perfect count here. Bottles of wine still in France.
Really?
That I'm trying to get sent back over here. And right now, that quote, looking the way that it looks, that it might be staying in France a little bit longer. But yeah, the wine thing, again, and sorry to ramble about this. This is something that really gets me going. But
no, go.
What I love most about wine, and I tell you, it's strange because it turns into like I'm more obsessed with buying the wine than I am drinking the wine, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. And I'm like really obsessed with drinking the wine, but like buying the wine is even more exciting. And so trying to figure out how to keep 200 bottles of wine in your house is, you know, without a nice fancy cellar and all that, you know, because I'm not nearly close enough to be putting that in my house yet. But when you go out and you have drinks at the bar or even at dinner, you know, Rich, you're going to order, you know, what you're going to order, and Anton, you're going to order what you're going to order, and I'll get what I'll get. And we all have separate drinks, and that's fine. We're here. We'll cheers each other. Great. Cool. We're having some. Now, when you're drinking a bottle of wine together, we're all going to decide what we're going to drink. They're going to bring over one bottle of wine.
Right.
And we are all going to share in that same experience of this one bottle of wine. And to me, it just creates this center point of connection. We're all going to experience this in different ways, but we're all going at this together, right? And so I don't know if that sounds a little crazy to some folks, but like to me, I think that's a really different way to look at sharing a bottle of wine with somebody than just going to meet somebody for drinks, right? It's like on this table, boom, in the center is now what we are all about to engage in. And so I just think that connection piece, and then 10 years later, you're thinking about, you know, the time that we got together, and dang, man, that bottle of wine that we had was amazing. You remember how hard we left that night, and that was, you know, and then it just becomes this memory that we all shared in together. And so really at the foundation of it, that's what it is. You know, it's that, who do I share this with? What was that moment like? And it just gets trapped inside that bottle. And then it's forever a memory connected to that wine, that bottle, that time, those people. And that energy. And I think that's one of the most beautiful things about it. So it will continue to be an important part of my life. I believe it or not, you will find that you will, with anything, right? With any passion, with any kind of thing that we love, you get to connect with other people who feel similarly.
Yeah.
And it's incredible the people that I've connected with through wine. You know, at first was kind of nervous about throwing that out there, one sounding crazy. Obviously, you're talking about alcohol, and so, you know, there's some people that look at it a little differently, but I've found that I've connected with a lot of people, especially in the business world, actually, who also appreciate wine. And I think that it's just another reminder to be yourself and really just shine your light, and those that are attracted to it will be there, and those that aren't won't, and that's okay. But just be yourself, and so that's something that I'm really just really taking on. And you know what? That's me. I'm the wine guy. Sure. You know, don't know everything about wine, not even close, but I do have a passion for it and very enthusiastic about it because, again, of what I feel is really at the foundation of it.
Interesting. Well,
next time we're in that rally area, we know who to ask, you know, for recommendations. And
Please. Well, first of all, I'm not going to just be giving you a recommendation if you're in Raleigh. We're going to be sharing that bottle together, guys. Let's say that.
Listen, that's not too bad. My parents are down there in Charlotte, so, you know, it's not that far away.
In Charlotte. So come on down, man.
All right, man. Listen, we can make that. We can definitely make that happen. I thought it was real interesting because, you know, my wife and I, we drink a bottle here or there or whatever. You know, I'm not, and granted, I'm abstaining this month because I'm on dry January. So
it's hurting me, man. It's hurting me.
Yeah. Oh, man, please. Like this, you know, sometimes even we do our podcast, we might have a little something to sip on or whatever. You know what I'm saying? But it's been, you know, it's been interesting this month so far. I feel a little, you know, my soul is a little cleansed or whatever. But I just always have felt like I know almost nothing about wine, you know, and it always has seemed so intimidating. Like, I've watched documentaries on sommeliers and all kinds of things, and I just think it is one of the most incredible things how people's palates become so refined and so astute that they can just name these things, regions, grapes, you know, soil. I just think it is truly amazing. Like, I thought it was just nonsense. You know, I really did. You know, like, you know, I used to, you know, I've graduated a little bit. You know, I was a yellowtail guy. Just give me, you know, just give me a little yellowtail, you know what I'm saying? Which is not bad wine. You know, Australians are doing all right, you know. Yeah. No more names.
But, you know,
I graduated a little bit, but it's just like, I always tell my wife, like, I never spend any more than about $16, maybe $20 for a bottle of wine. I said, because anything more than that, I just don't, you know, I don't, my palate is not refined enough to understand the difference between, you know, a $10 bottle of wine and a $48, $200 bottle. You know, so when you start to get in so deep into stuff, it's just, I just find it so amazing when people find a passion in something and they invest a little time. And this is, I mean, that's a good thing to invest a little bit of time and some energy in. Yeah. You know, it sounds like that wine is like the golf of beverages. You know what I'm saying? Like, you make connections and, you know, business deals or, you know, good times, and people that's not about, they don't like it. They don't, you know, people, you know, but I just think it's interesting that when a person finds something that they're really passionate about, and then they just, for, you know, no pun intended, pour themselves into, you know, that thing.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And you said it perfect. It's going to be for some people and it's not going to be for some people. Yeah. But, you know, the people that it is for, you know, you just build that community around, and it becomes pretty special. And, you know, when we get offline here, I'll send you a list of some great bottles of wine at $20 and under.
I love that.
You can get the good stuff and not have to break the bank for it.
I love it. We might have to bring Marcus back for the wine of the month. to bring him back for the bottle of the month.
Third co-host right there. Yeah.
Right. I'm available, guys. I'm available.
We got our wine guy. We definitely got our wine guy. So we're gonna fast forward a little bit, right? Let's just mosey this thing right down the track, right? I love the where we're moving. So now we know that you're back in the States, right? Not balling anymore, right? Let's get everybody up to speed, right?
Correct. Yeah.
So not balling anymore, right? So now, where has life brought you? And so we don't even have to speculate. We know he's in business because he's got the mind. He's got, you know, he's got the communication skills, the people skills. So we know he's in business. So where did basketball bring you to your current, you know, how did you make that transition? Or as we said earlier, that pivot from basketball into whatever you're doing right now?
Yeah. gosh, it's a crazy story, actually. And so it started in the summer of 2021. Actually, that's false. Let's back up even more. It started in the summer of 2015. Okay.
Okay.
And so in the spring of 2015, I tore a ligament in my thumb, which got me released from the Knicks team.
Okay.
Turns out, because of an injury and all the funky rules of the NBA, it turns out I got released, but they still owned my rights. So I went all the way to Greece thinking I was going to be playing in Greece for a while, but never ended up getting released from my team in New York. Huh. That's a whole separate story. But in that summer, I was home longer, right? So I got released in February, so I was home longer. So I decided to intern with a group called the Rams Club, which is the fundraising arm to athletic department at the University of North Carolina. So they are charged with raising funds to give scholarships, to work on facilities, to support operating budgets, all the things, right? All the things for athletics. And so I did an internship with them, thinking maybe I could go into basically a fundraising role for the university. It keeps me in front of people, keeps me connected with the university. So I thought this would be an interesting idea to kind of figure out how the inner workings of this business kind of happen. And so that was a cool internship that I did for like 3 or 4 months during the time that I was not playing. Fast forward to 2018, summer of 2018, I'm thinking, gosh, man, these deals that I'm looking at right now to go back and play don't look great. It's, gosh, it was end of September. I'm typically gone in August. At that point, I think that was my eighth or ninth year I just finished. And I'm like, you know, maybe this is it, right? Maybe I should just take this as a sign as, you know, this is time to move on. Got a call late that fall or early that fall, whatever that is, October timeframe. Boom, I'm out the door and I ended up playing another three. But have had kind of a couple of times thinking that it may be time to transition. You know, what are my next steps? What have I done in my past that could help me get to the next step? Who do I know? Who have I been connecting with? And so kind of had that engine going a little bit. So in the summer of 2021, I didn't think that I was going to retire. Okay. So I came back home in June of 2021. I didn't think I was going to retire, but what happened was my team bought me out of my long-term contract, had a couple more years on my deal, bought me out. So I said, okay, time for a change, new team. Let's just put this out of my mind for right now. I had spent 2 years in France because I didn't come home during COVID. Summer 2020, I didn't come home, stayed in Europe the entire time, then went and played a season. So August of 2019 to June of 21. So I said, you know what? I'm not even going to sign a deal until December. I'm not going back in August. I just got back in June. I've been home. I've been gone 2 years. I haven't seen my family. COVID's wrecking everything. Like, I just want to get home, get settled, see what's going on. So I went to my buddy's wedding in Houston, Texas. Again, you all know him very well. Danny Green.
Okay.
So I go to his wedding in Houston, Texas. And the night before the wedding, we're sitting having drinks, talking to this guy from New York. Danny's from New York. So this guy from New York, who's been in commercial real estate for a long time. And he's telling us about how, you know, more athletes and basketball players need to think about commercial real estate. And I'm like, you know what? I got a couple of mentors of mine in North Carolina that are in commercial real estate. Sounds, you know, pretty interesting. Let's connect, right? He says, well, you know what? I need to connect you to a guy in Charlotte. And so this guy in Charlotte runs a development firm. And I've been running up and down the highway, just kind of like meeting with folks over the summer, because I'm starting to get to the point now where I'm like, man, I don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
So I meet with this guy, and he says, you know what? I'm going to invite one of my buddies to lunch. You know, this guy's a Carolina guy, which was also a great way for me to continue to network with folks. And so I went and met with him, and he brought his friend, and his friend is named Don Williams. And I met with Don and Adam, the other guy that I originally went to meet, and great conversation. It was cool to meet Don. Didn't know who he was. Wasn't supposed to meet him, but he just happened to be there. A couple months later, I ran into Don again, and I find out that he's super involved with Carolina Athletics. And that he runs this really, you know, interesting real estate firm that's based out of Charlotte, and, you know, start talking some more. And then next thing you know, it's the end of October, and I have an offer on the table from Don Williams and his company.
Wow.
The guy that I was never supposed to meet just turned out to be a friend of a friend from New York who I met right at a wedding in Houston. So, right. You know, it was like August, September where I kind of officially decided to retire and then really started kind of chasing these other avenues that I was looking at. But it really just kind of happened from some conversations and with the connection from the Tar Heels and with, again, which a perfect way to kind of, you know, bring this podcast more into, you know, right into front center here, because of the way that I presented myself and a lot of the meetings that I had with a lot of these folks who would end up offering me a job.
Right.
And right. I'll never forget. I was going up and down the highway between DC and North Carolina. And I probably in 2 months took 50 meetings.
Wow.
I mean, my full-time job was meet people.
Right.
Hey,
right.
Tell me about your business. How do you see a young man like me fitting into this type of business? Do you think that this is something that I can work with? What have been your ups and downs? And tell me, you know, all the things and just connecting with folks. And I would always wear a suit to these meetings.
Right.
And every single meeting I had, somebody said something to me about it. How good I looked, or you didn't need to get so dressed up, or whatever the case is. They said something about it.
Yep, and they noticed it.
And even years prior to that, when I was playing in New York, that's actually the summer before I went to New York was the first time that I ever bought a custom suit.
Yeah.
And I want to shout out my man, LeBuck, for this, because he came after me for 5 straight years. Hey, man, I want to talk to you about these suits, man. I'd love to get you in something nice, custom, these shirts. And I'm like, no thanks. And he came every year he came after me. And that 5th year, I finally bought some stuff for him. And I will never buy something from somebody else. I mean, I don't say never, but man, these guys closing me pretty tight. But I tell you what, I'm so thankful for that. And I remember I went to a meeting at Slam Magazine in downtown New York City. And I ended up writing a couple articles for them during my time in New York. And so I went down there to meet with their editor. And so I was waiting in the lobby. And I remember somebody jumped out of a Range Rover. They were getting driven around. They had a driver. They popped out of the Range Rover. They came in the office for like 10 minutes and then they came out. And on their way out, they're like, you know what, brother? I don't know what you're in here interviewing for, but you're going to get that job.
Wow.
And just the way that when you walk into that room with a suit that fits you, you got your nice tie on, you got your shoes polished, you just... When you show that you respect yourself in that way, you know, it just creates an aura around you that's hard to replicate in other ways, right? You know, this feeling that people get when they see you dressed nicely like that, right? Taking care of yourself. And so I think that's a big part of kind of what made that transition a little easier for me, was just that immediate first impression that folks had about me was, oh man, this guy's serious about this. Yeah. Whatever he's walking in here for, he's serious about that, you know? And so, you know, that's really kind of how it started. And then just building a relationship with Don and had a great feeling about him and the folks that worked with him and looked at it very similarly as the way I looked at basketball, right? Like, what organization am I coming into?
Yeah.
What does the leadership look like? How invested are they going to be in my development? What's campus like, right? What's their office dynamic? What's their culture within the company?
Right.
And it just seemed to fit. The industry seemed to fit. The location was perfect. And so so everything worked out well. And so to put this all in perspective for everybody listening, I now work with a company called Medalist Capital. We have offices in Charlotte, like I said, headquartered out of Charlotte, Atlanta, Charleston, and Raleigh. And we're in the financial services and the commercial real estate space. We've typically been kind of known as our bread and butter is, commercial mortgage brokers. But we also work with, equity placement as well. And just started an investment sales and advisory arm a year ago where we assist, as real estate brokers, our clients in buying and selling of their commercial real estate assets. So two years ago, you looked at me and said, hey, man, you're playing professional basketball. You're about to retire. What are you going to do? The last thing I would have said was commercial real estate finance. Yeah. I would have never thought that. But, again, just very similarly to getting cut from the Charlotte Bobcats, I would have never told you that 3 weeks later I'd be on a flight to Germany. Right. And so it's just like, what is presented to you? Are you willing to take that risk? And then are you willing to make the best of that choice and give it everything that you can? You know, which again gets back to my parents in the way that, okay, I don't care what you do, but whatever you do, you're going to give it your all. You're going to be a good person while doing it. You know, you're going to work your tail off. And so that's where I currently am right now. And, you know, you talked about the transition. I'm still technically transitioning. You know, I'm 13 months into a completely new industry. I spent my entire adult life, you know, age 22 to 34, living in Europe. So I'm still transitioning into being an adult here in the U.S. 35 years old, gentlemen. I was 35 years old when I first had utilities in my name.
Wow.
So just trying to figure all that out, you know, like
right,
you know, which is crazy to think about, right? But like all of those things. So still, you know, transitioning, you know, even to this day. But again, just grateful for the opportunity that I have in front of me, and I'm willing and ready to really give it my all and just work as hard as I can, just like I have in everything else in my life.
Yeah, and all that hard work, like we see, it's really paid off. And we know you're headed places. So we're going to stay tuned. We're going to keep in touch with you and see the next part of this journey, because the story you just gave for us is very valuable for our listeners. And I, for one, I'm going to make my two sons, they're going to listen to this podcast.
I appreciate that.
I don't usually make them tune in, but this is one that definitely I'd love for them to tune in and listen to. And I just want to say, you know, thank you again for your time joining us. But before you go, please, too, if you want to share any social media or just ways people can follow and just kind of see some of this journey or learn more about wine, you know, even that, go ahead, just let us know and then we'll wrap up.
Yeah, so would love to connect with any and everybody that wants to kind of follow along on this journey. I'm probably most active on Instagram, and you know, my tag is M Guignard. Just replace the I with a one, so MG1NYARD. Also the same on Twitter, but mostly that's just going to be my reposts from Instagram. And then I would also just kind of. I would also let everybody know out there who's listening to reach out on LinkedIn. Again, you know, Marcus Guignard, I'm active there as well. And really always open to connecting with folks, whether that be about business, whether that be about the transition in life, whether that be about basketball or, you know, wine, whatever it may be, because we never really know, you know, where that next opportunity for us is, regardless of what industry you're in, regardless of what you're doing in your life. You'll never know if there's any synergy if you don't know that person, if you don't get to know them,
right.
If you don't, you know, build a relationship with them. So I'm always open to connect and to communicate with any and everybody. So please do reach out, follow all the things. And yeah, I appreciate you letting me share that.
Most definitely. Go ahead, Anton, take us home.
Listen, this was an incredible podcast. We hope that people were inspired by Marcus' story. It was just a beautiful way for us to understand how life winds blows us in many different directions. But a lot of times it's really our outlook on it. You know, are we going to be able to go with that wind? Are we going to be able to make adjustments in our thinking and our attitude towards life? Right. He said so many times during this podcast how he treated people, the type of person he was and all kinds of things. Those are important things that all of us can take away from anything. So no matter where we are in life, you know, don't look at people different. You know, don't look down on people. Don't think that that person can't help you or you can't help them. You know, so just try to be a good citizen, a good human being. And we saw those glimpses of that today in this podcast. So we appreciate again you being with us. I know we'll be in touch again. You know, of course, you got a wine list to send us. And yes, we got a whole host of other things that, you know, we could talk about. It was great connecting with you. And we look forward to having you on our podcast again one day. So for everyone out there watching our podcast, listening to our podcast, this is the Life of a Gentleman podcast. We appreciate all of you. Share it, like, follow, subscribe. And until next time, this is the Life of a Gentleman podcast. Guys, listen, we thank everybody for tuning in one more time to the Life of a Gentleman podcast. We really want to thank our guest, Mr. Marcus Guignard, for giving us such a great interview, enlightening us with so many little facets of his life. It was just a great time. So we want to thank you for coming through once again. Stay tuned for our next upcoming episodes. We have so much in store for you. And if we have nothing else, Rich, you have anything you want to bring us home with?
Yeah, just don't forget to give us a follow on Instagram at the Gentleman's Podcast, at Wear Lapel Pins. Check us out online, Harrison Blake Apparel, for all things custom. That would be custom shoes, custom shirts, custom suits is our specialty. And guess what? You can even meet with me or Anton online, and we'll take care of you virtually, no matter where you are in the world. We love all of our listeners. We appreciate you. And until next time, guys, take care.